session number 27194, Reel 2.
Mr. Foster, Reel 2. I think you were saying where the section leader would be in an advance in Arrowhead.
Yeah. Well, as I remember, he would be more or less in the middle, but perhaps more the back so that he could see all the chaps and could easily control them. Yeah.
Do you remember having the 2-inch mortar brought into play at this stage?
Yes. Yeah, well, later.
Later?
Yeah. When I joined D Company, training became more and more technical and more complex. But our first actual job was defending the oil tanks at Falmouth, D Company, that was their job, defending the oil tanks at Falmouth against a possibility of German paratroops or a landing of some sort, because the big scare was on then about the Germans invading us. So we would patrol the dock area at Falmouth, and that took up most of our time, but we were still training, and the training became more advanced while we were there.
Did you have any scares about action by German paratroops while you were guarding the installations at Falmouth?
Well, yes, there were plenty of sort of scares and warnings, and possibly some of them were just to keep us more alert. But we would have to patrol the docks and always be watching out for any suspicious happenings or people or whatever.
Do you recall ever seeing anything suspicious when you were on patrol?
I don't think so particularly then, but it was a dodgy sort of time in that you weren't allowed to relax at all. It very much had to be on guard all the time, yes. That was while we were at Falmouth.
Did you patrol in strength? What sort of scale would the patrol be?
Well, I think most of it was sort of individual stuff, in that everyone had a certain area of the docks to patrol about, and you had to be moving around the actual tanks and the jetties and all the rest of it all day and night, so we were pretty thick on the ground anyway. Yes.
And did you have static guard posts as well as...
Oh, yes. Yeah, mobile? Yes, there were. That's right, yes. In particularly vulnerable places, yeah.
What sort of places were regarded as particularly vulnerable?
Well, of course, the tanks themselves and the outbuildings all around them for the dock area, the dry docks and jetties. Oh, yes, they were all highly vulnerable, and we had to keep a close watch on everything that was happening.
Do you know if, while you were engaged on this duty, there were any arrests of suspicious characters?
I'm sure there must have been. We used to hear about it sometimes. You know, oddbods, you know, who would be arrested and checked over. Yes, oh yeah, there must have been. There were.
Mm. And were you given, you know, specific instructions on how to recognise someone who was suspicious? What to look for?
Well, the old drill, of course, was... you know, advance and be recognised and checked all the documents and all the rest of it. But you were supposed to be canny and recognise whether people were genuine or not. And if you had any doubt, you had to move them on to the sergeant or officer in charge. Yeah.
Now, I was going to ask, going back again to the basic training, for many recruits going into the army was a shock because of the transition into a more disciplined way of life.
Yes.
What about you? Did you find the military discipline a shock?
No, not particularly. I didn't brought up in a sort of a disciplined family. I mean, with a service background, so it wasn't a particular shock, no. And from what we'd read about the state of the world anyway, it was something to be expected, yes. Yeah, no, it didn't prove very irksome at all, no. It's what I expected.
Did that apply to everybody else as well in your squad of recruits? Or
In most cases, yes. Mm. Yeah, and I soon discovered that the chaps who made sort of most impression were those with the best sense of humour. Got everyone laughing about it. And no matter how strange or unusual were the circumstances and things we were told to do, there was always some fool who could laugh at it and carried the thing along. Yeah.
Who was actually doing the instruction at Seaton Barracks? Was this...
There were officers from the different light infantry regiments, because we were light infantry based, our basic training, and we moved at light infantry pace all the time, and we did light infantry drill from the very beginning at Seaton Barracks. So they would have been light infantry officers from the Cornwalls and Somersets. Could well have been some from the Durhams and the others, but they were light infantry based, and so were the NCOs, yes. Yeah, regular soldiers. Quite a few of them. And in each barrack room, as a matter of interest, was a regular private soldier in each barrack room, who was the senior, what do they call him there? Well, senior soldier, yes, in each barrack room. And what he said really went in that barrack room. And they were old soldiers, Indian wallahs we used to call them, because they'd seen service in India, and they had to be listened to with great respect. Yeah.
What was yours like? I mean, was he very formal in dealing with you, or was he informal and humorous, or
well,
what line did he take?
Impressed us, because the regular soldiers we thought were so smart and so good on all their drills and discipline. And the particular chap in my back room, he would tell us lurid tales about his service on the Indian frontier and all his conquests and how well he had done and all the rest of it. Quite a bit of it which could have been in his imagination, but at the same time they had wonderful personalities and they knew what was what, and they knew how to impress us as young chaps. These were older chaps, obviously. So we learned a lot from them. Yeah.
When it came down to the actual business of instruction on the square and in the field,
yeah,
who was doing that? Was that officers or was it NCOs?
There would be an officer in overall charge and on view, with several sergeants and about half a dozen or so corporals who would be doing the actual instructing. And the officer would be going the rounds, checking on how each little detachment was getting on all the time, and pushing. Yeah.
Were all the men in your recruit squad destined for the Cornwalls, or were they going to go to other regiments as well?
In my particular squad, they were destined for the Cornwalls, yes, they were, yes.
Were they mainly men from Cornwall with Cornish connections?
Oh, no, there were quite a few Londoners, Bristol chaps, Plymouth chaps. A very mixed bag, yes. Yeah, North Country chaps, all sorts. Mm.
How did they get on? Did you all get on well together, or did you have causes of tension?
Got on very well together. In the beginning, it was a bit more difficult to understand the North Country chaps from the dialect. But we soon grew to realise that they had a slightly different sense of humour, different parts of the country. And it made life more interesting. Yeah, very good.
Another thing that is normally a part of basic training that you have mentioned was physical training. PT.
Oh, yes. Plenty of that. That went on all the time, in between lectures, to loosen everyone up and make sure no one fell asleep. There would always be a break for limbering up, we used to call it, which meant the basic arms, legs, and press-ups and stuff like that. Yeah. Always be a session of that, in between everything, so that you couldn't get stale.
And were there more formal sessions in the gymnasium or anything of that sort?
Yeah, sometimes there would... I can't remember the gym at Seton. I just can't remember that. But I'm sure we did have sort of platoon and... yeah, up to platoon strength exercises. She's got a bit of a chestiness. Number one cat.
So, what about games? Did you play games during basic training?
Very little. The accent was on training, and life was very serious. Not many games.
What time did the routine day finish when you were in basic training?
As far as I remember, about 5 o'clock, 1700, yes.
What happened after that?
Tea. Yeah. We would have tea. And then, unless you were on guard, you could come into Plymouth for the evening. And walk into Plymouth, of course. And there would be a few buses to get back out there for... in time for lights out.
When was that?
Lights out was quite reasonably early, about 10:30, 22:30. So we had to get back in good time.
And presumably you were able to go and visit your family?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Yes, that's right. Yeah, because my family were in Plymouth. So that was a jolly good thing. And I remember the few buses that were available would leave Plymouth city centre at about 10 o'clock or whatever. And they would be loaded to the gunnels with chappies hanging on the sides and all sorts. The girl conductor would protest, but they'd all pile in there. And all the rest would just have to walk back or run or whatever to get back to the barracks in time.
What happened if you got back late?
Oh, you were in the book, definitely in the book, and you would be confined to barracks, yes. All had to check in at the guard room at the gate on the way back, yeah.
Was there a lot of lateness?
Oh, quite a bit, yes, there was. Quite a lot of chaps got in the book, yeah.
Did you ever go in the book?
A few times, yes.
And what happened to you? You were just confined?
Confined to barracks, you just missed some days out. Lights out.
What could you do if you were confined to barracks?
Fatigues. You would stay, have to do fatigues after parades. Fatigues. Yeah.
What did fatigues consist of?
Cleaning the square, the barracks, and peeling potatoes and odd jobs, cleaning up the cookhouse and things like that, yeah.
If you went into the book because you were late back, who actually dealt with you? Did you go up before an officer, or was it dealt with by an NCO?
Oh, you went before the... yes, I mean, we weren't really in companies, you know, but we are. Anyway, the company commander as such, yes, you would be up before him, and it was duly laid down that just being late back at barracks was a terrible crime, and you're on active service, and... oh, yes.
How many days CB would you get for being late?
Probably 5 days.
5 days?
Yeah, I expect, yes. Yeah, I seem to remember doing 5 days, yeah.
And did the officer give you a lecture as well? Or
oh,
did
yeah.
he just give you...
Yeah, it was pretty awful. So, you weren't helping the war effort by being late, Parker Parks.
Sounds a very powerful system of discipline.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was.
Now, you got to D Company, and there you were on...
D for dog.
D Company, yeah. D Company, 5th DCLI at Falmouth, and there you were, actually, on serious duty, weren't
yes.
you, guarding...
Yeah, guarding the docks, the insulations,
yes.
oil tanks.
Yeah. Was the company up to strength?
Oh, yes, it was. Yes, because all these chaps had come in. Yes, it was. And it was... the battalion, 5th Battalion, was... a territorial battalion, so all the obviously they were all Cornish chaps, the beginning of the battalion, and in fact, as a matter of history, there had been two battalions, the 4th and the 5th, and before the war, they'd gone to camp, I think it was at Corf Castle, anyway, they went to camp as... a joint battalion, 4th oblique 5th territorials. And while we were at camp, with war just about to start, they were split into the two battalions. 4th went one way and the 5th the other. And we joined the 5th. So we, from Sitting Barracks, all the mixed chappies from all over the country, were the first intake to make the territorials up to strength. So the 5th Battalion, as they were then, of about half strength of Cornish chappies, territorials, received our lot to make them up to a complete battalion.
Did you find that there were any differences in the way in which you did things, or the way in which you thought about things, between yourselves and the Cornish TA sergeants?
Yes,
were?
Because they were very much the old friendly... territorial atmosphere, and they all knew each other so well because they'd been territorials together for some time, and we were strangers coming in, very much so, yes, in the beginning, and we were suffering until it took time to join in with them.
How much time was it before you managed to amalgamate and
I should think quite a few months, because some chaps were quite different, you see. I mean, the London chaps, for instance. I mean, the Cornish chaps thought that the London blokes were smart alecks and clever dicks and all that sort of thing. And the London chaps probably thought the Cornish were a bit different because they were Cornish. And then there were the Bristol and Plymouth and North Country chaps all finding a way as well. So it took a bit of shaking up to get the whole thing. Oh, it did. Must have taken quite a bit of time. Yeah, it did.
What did you think of yourself as a West Countryman or as a Londoner? Because you worked in London.
Half and half. I didn't know, really, because up to 12 I'd been in Plymouth and Cornwall. And then I'd spent from 12 till 20, 8 years in London. So I was a bit of a mixture, really. Perhaps that helped me mix up with all the others a lot better, yeah.
Hmm. And did this lead to actual fights or just arguments? Or
I
what?
Don't think we had fights as such, but obviously the barrack room sort of... a little bit of antagonism sometimes. Didn't go on, didn't amount to very much, but, the smart aleck London chaps and the Cornish blokes and yeah, a little bit.
So the verbal exchanges.
Yeah. Oh yes. Yeah. Yeah. And competition as well. I mean, obviously, if we're chasing the girls. Cornish chaps thought the London blokes were a different style, which they did, and vice versa. Yeah, things like that.
But are there any distinctively Cornish characteristics that? Think of.
Well, we used to think that the Cornish chaps were rather more close and sort of parochial in a way. They kept together more, whereas the other chaps were more rather more distanced. Cornwall chaps tended to keep very much together, more family wise. Yeah, that seemed to be a thing.
What about their level of military skills? What did you think of those?
Well, the Cornwall chaps, the territorials, had an edge because they'd been doing most of what we were doing. They'd been doing it for a while. So they definitely had an edge. And perhaps in a way that made a little bit of conflict because we thought they were ahead of us in most things, yes. Oh, yeah. And in the... See, they had been training in the technical skills. I mean, like the signals and the mortars and the machine gunners and all the rest of it. They had been doing all that before. So they were a bit ahead of us. We had to catch up with them.
Would I be right in thinking they were probably also, on average, older than you were?
Some of them were, yes. Yeah, they were a little bit older, yes. Because if they'd been in the territorials for a few years, for instance, and
So if they were in their mid-20s, to say, and you were in your early 20s, late
We were all 20 years old. We were the 20-year-old intake.
Yeah.
So they could have been a year or so older, perhaps, on average. Might have been,
That makes quite a lot of difference at that age, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, rather. Yeah, yeah. And of course, the NCOs were Cornish because they had been promoted in the territorial. Yes.
Did you find that they tended to favour the Cornish side rather than the new boys?
Well, perhaps instinctively they did a little bit because they knew them well. But there again, they had to... the NCOs, the Cornish NCOs, had... visibly to break down the familiarity they'd had with their chaps before, because we were all then on a regular footing.
I was going to say, what, you know...
Discipline became very much stricter.
It became stricter?
Oh, yes.
So that the old relaxed TA way gave way to the...
Had to go by the board.
Had to go by the board.
Yeah, we used to hear this sometimes, sort of audibly, because a territorial chappy talking to an NCO... Cornish NCO, perhaps on the old familiar terms, would be told it's not on. It had to be much more formal.
Well, that could be a cause of resentment, couldn't it? Amongst
a little bit,
old,
yes.
Cornish.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Did you find that they mixed you in with the Cornish chaps when you arrived? Did they mix the new boys into... platoons to break you up?
Oh yes, we were.
So you're integrated in that.
That's
way.
Right. We were pitched right in. Yes. Oh yes, there wasn't any sort of. You weren't allowed to be distance at all. You pitched right in. Yeah.
And mixed barrack rooms.
Yeah, mixed batch. And this is what made, to a large extent, made life interesting, because in the first section I was in platoon, I mean, we had chaps from Bristol and London. Along with the Cornish chaps, Plymouth and everywhere. North Country, the lot.
What about the officers? Were they mainly Cornish?
They were mainly Cornish, yes, they were. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And in the beginning, the sort of gulf between the officers and... Well, the private soldiers, like me, it was quite a big gulf, which became less as the war went on. You know, when you get to know them better and all the rest of it, you realise the rank structure and the reason for it, and it was accepted.
It's a natural process, isn't it, getting to know each other better as time goes on?
That's right. Yeah, you realise the responsibility of the different ranks and... how it worked.
Did the officers do anything in order to try and promote integration between the two types of soldiers they got?
Well, I can't think visibly, except that we did get on very well, so they must have done something. I think it must have been in the mind anyway that all the chaps needed to be shaken up together.
I was asking about the strength of the battalion, which was obviously brought up by this draft.
Yeah.
Was it fully equipped? Did it have all the kit it needed?
Oh, no, not in the beginning. Gosh, no, we had very little transport. Just a few trucks. Civilian buses used to be commandeered to carry us about in strength, because there was a great shortage of transport. In those days, in the beginning of the war, no tanks were ever visible, and no guns. So we were purely infantry and infantry training.
What about
in the beginning?
What about your weapons, though? Did the battalion have enough basic
rifles.
Weapons?
Yes. We had rifles, and after a while we had enough Brens, yes. Two-inch mortars.
Do you remember when the Brens arrived?
And the grenades.
In numbers?
Not really. I should imagine about 1940, something like that. Yeah.
Not when you first went to Falmouth?
No, I don't think we had so many when we first went to Falmouth. But they came in shortly after that, yes. Yeah.
What about ammunition? When you were guarding the oil tanks, what would your...
We would carry a bandolier of 50 rounds of 303. Our rifles were 303, Lee Enfields.
No shortage of Lee Enfield ammunition?
No, oh no, plenty of that.
Now you mentioned that besides doing these guard duties, you were also training when you were
yes.
at Falmouth. What sort of training did you do there?
That was mainly platoon training, and platoon and company.
Where did you do that? Was that in the, you know,
in the country,
around Falmouth?
Country around Falmouth, yes. Yeah.
What sort of things were you practicing?
Attacks, company attacks, day and night attacks.
Was there an emphasis on night work, or was it mainly daytime?
I think it was pretty mixed, you know, between day and night, yes, because we were supposed to expect anything to happen at any time. Yeah.
And when you did a company attack, what sort of pattern would you be laid out in for that? What sort of formation would you...
Well, there'd be a platoon, an assaulting platoon, one platoon in reserve, and another flanking platoon to exploit after the attacking platoon took a position or whatever, and the reserve platoon to come in and mop up at the end. Yes, that was the usual thing.
Were you employing fire and movement as the
basis? Oh yeah, that came in very much the 1940, the expression was fire and movement. Instead of static stuff, trenches and positions, the emphasis was very much more on having a firing position and then quickly moving on to another one. And the chaps moving up to exploit any breakthrough anywhere. Yeah, there was another expression which I can't think of at the moment for the new tactics which came in. Yeah. It was based on foreign movement. Yes,
this
it was.
In 1940 this came
yeah,
in.
Yeah, 1940. Mm. Yeah. And there were... We had demonstrations and practice in using phosphorus grenades came out about that time, because I remember one officer who was demonstrating the phosphorus grenades. One of his grenades went off a bit prematurely and caught his shirt on fire. His shirt burnt all around his body, but he disregarded it and just shook off the sort of embers of the shirt to demonstrate how effective this phosphorus grenade was. Training was quite realistic then. Yeah.
Did you have any live firing at that time?
Yeah, we had some live firing. Not a lot of it, but it started to come in, yes, live firing, yeah. And we did, in fact, in those early days, at least one chap was killed, one of our chaps, by an incident of an instructor firing over our heads. A chap, he must have put his head.